Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Hello, friends. I cannot tell a lie. 67 years ago, I chopped down a cherry tree. This is the weekend before President's Day, honoring Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, both of whom apparently were born on a Monday. The government will get the day off, but not 35, as some had feared. Today's show has several interesting people in agriculture. Anna Hastert talks with Mike Naig, the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, about Century Farms and Heritage Farms. He's going to recognize both at the state fair this summer. Dustin Hoffman spoke with Governor Kim Reynolds about her talk with the head of the EPA. And I spoke with Chris Clayton, a reporter from DTN Progressive Farmer, who just returned from an agricultural tour of Brazil.
George Washington, the first president.
Our song of the week may have gotten out of hand. I determined it had to be about Washington or Lincoln. I didn't know until I started surfing YouTube that there are history songs about presidents. It's actually a brilliant idea for those who learn by musical memory.
In a 7 years war, he lived an aristocratic lifestyle like many British before. But when the British acted up, he became commander-in-chief. And the war, he proved to everyone that he was born to lead. Despite some major setbacks in Brandywine Valley Forge, he always reminded his troops what they were fighting for. He never liked politics, never liked to play that game. But the new country needed a president, so they just forced him in. He remains the only president to receive 100% of the electoral votes.
Wait, I'm getting a tweet. It says, George Washington was not our greatest president. I am.
Everybody loves Abraham Lincoln. He won the Civil War for our nation. A force of reason, bravery, he signed the end of slavery. Everybody loves Abraham Lincoln. But do you know all the things that went wrong? Things to make a lesser guy say so long. Potholes, pitfalls, traps and trials, hurdles for 100 miles. No wonder he never smiles. He lost his first job. He lost his first race for state senate, opened a brand new store, but it closed after a minute. He got elected, it was badly timed, his girlfriend Anne suddenly died, had a full breakdown, lost it and cried, all before he turned 25. Everybody loves Abraham Lincoln.
But I was really looking for something that captured the spirit. Here's a ballad by Fess Parker. Remember him? Daniel Boone on TV of the 1960s.
I can hear the echo of 1,000 ringing bells. I can smell the cannons and hear the people's yells. Long live George Washington, their ghostly voices say. And I still feel his spirit to this very day. And I can see a young boy growing straight and tall. And as I watch him hunt and ride, I've no doubt at all, it won't be long till he's full grown. And then will come the day he'll become the president of the USA. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say. He's the first and greatest president of the USA. I see him fighting engines up on his great white horse. I feel the loneliness he felt while steering history's course. He was first in war and first in peace, and he was first again in the hearts of everyone of his countrymen. Long live George Washington, I hear the people say.
He's the first and greatest president of the USA. Well, in those days at Valley Forge, he held his men in hand, then crossed the Delaware, and there in Trenton freed this land. He's the father of our country, and to this very day, he's the first and greatest president of the USA. He's the first and greatest president of the USA.
So that's our moment of patriotism as we prepare to salute our honored leaders by purchasing furniture, cars, and waterbeds on Monday.
This is National FFA Week, and FFA chapters all around the country are sharing what FFA is and how it impacts the members. Howdy, everyone. My name is Ridge Hubanks, and I'm currently serving as the Central Region Vice President. The FFA Board of Directors designated this week-long tradition, which began in 1948, in recognition of George Washington's legacy as an agriculturist and farmer. Through FFA, students' lives are changing, and FFA has been influencing generations and providing leaders since 1928.
Every producer has questions, like, what's my break even on corn? What happens if I expand the herd? How much can I afford for cash rent? These and other financial questions can now be answered with Magnify, the revolutionary management software from Farm Credit Services of America. Magnify helps deliver the financial insights you want for the profit you need. Learn more at fcsamerica.com/magnify. Powered by Farm Credit.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
Recognition of those who have held it together on a farm for over 100 years is done each year at the Iowa State Fair. It's an all-day event honoring families who have had a continuous 100 years or more of owning the same farm. Anna Hastert found out more from our Secretary of Agriculture. Hello, Anna.
Good morning, Ken. So this past week, I had the opportunity to sit down with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg, and we discussed the Century and Heritage Farm Awards. Applications are open for both of these awards currently, and farmers are encouraged to apply for these if their farms are celebrating either a 100-year anniversary or 150-year anniversary. The state wants to recognize those farms, those farmers that have taking the land that was passed down onto them and making sure that it stays in the family, and recognize them for the stewardship practices that they've also implemented throughout the years to make sure that that land's going to be sustainable for the next generation, as well as many other things that benefit the overall population. So here's my conversation with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Nagg.
If you've got a farm that qualifies for either the Century Farm or the Heritage Farm, so those are farms that have been in the family for 100 or 150 years, to apply for the program, and we will once again be awarding those certificates at the Iowa State Fair on August 15th. So we just want to tell folks, if you're interested in that and you want more information, please reach out to us. We've got a deadline of June 1st to get those applications in so we can get ready for the fair. But again, we just would really encourage folks to participate if you've got a farm that qualifies.
And why do you feel it's important to recognize these farmers who have been in the business for a long time, or just even their families?
Oh, you bet. You know, last year, fair was the first time that I had a chance to present these awards. We did 359 Century Farms and 148 Heritage Farms, and we do it all in one day. It's a great day, and what you end up with is, you know, you've got multiple generations of a family who crossed that stage, and it's a very very moving and joyous occasion, and it really struck home to me that it takes an awful lot of tenacity and commitment on the part of a family to keep a farm in a family for 100 or 150 years. I mean, think of all of the life events that happen through the course of those years, or the external events, weather events, market events, wars, you know, deaths in the family. It takes a lot, and it's a special thing to be able to celebrate that with families. So again, it's a great day. It's one I'm very much looking forward to. And again, we just want to see as many families cross that stage as we possibly can.
Now, you talked about some of the changes that happened throughout the generations. Let's talk about some of the improvements that we're seeing in agriculture as these families keep pushing forward.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're here. In fact, I just left a luncheon with certified crop advisors. We recognized two crop advisors and gave them awards for the work that they're doing on conservation, both in terms of the nutrient management and tillage practices, you know, that they work with farmers and landowners on, but also these individuals in particular are also looking at conservation structures and other practices that can be implemented. As I like to say, you know, Iowa is, we're famous for our ag production, but we aspire to be famous for our stewardship as well. And so I think about all of those pieces of technology, different ways that we've managed our farms today. We're doing a better job than we've ever done before in terms of stewardship, both in the crop and in the livestock side. So it's really is, you know, again, a Century Heritage Farm program gives you a chance to really do think back about where did we come from? How did we get here? What are some of those really milestone pieces of technology or practices that have allowed us to be here today? And what will it take to continue to be productive going into the future?
Now, talking about the future and being productive, you recently took a trip to Colombia and Panama. Let's talk about the opportunities for Iowa farmers in both of those markets.
Well, you bet. We just returned from a state trade mission to Colombia and Panama. Both countries present us with great opportunities to expand our meat exports in particular. So in the case of Colombia, we're looking at very consumption in the country is on the rise, and both their domestic producers and U.S. exports, there's an opportunity there. So by the way, Colombia happens to be a very significant buyer of corn and soybeans as well. So we already have a great market there, and it's an opportunity to do even more. Panama, very much the same, looking at protein opportunities there, some high-end beef sales, quality U.S. beef, trying to get on the plate there. So both present great opportunities, and we had a chance to take some Iowa farmers and some Iowa businesses with us, and it's always important to sit across the table from your customers and look them face-to-face and ask them if they have any questions for us and thank them for their business. So I would also note that both Colombia and Panama are countries that the U.S. has free trade agreements with. And so that really struck me once again, as if we needed to be reminded of this, but it once again underscored the importance of being aggressive, playing offense on trade, pursuing free trade agreements around the world. But those two countries in particular have healthy trade relationships and export markets for us because they have free trade agreements. So we need to make sure that we're continuing to look around the world for opportunities like that.
And do you think that both of these countries could pick up some maybe missed opportunities for U.S. meat exports, especially since we're not involved in the TPP agreement?
Well, first of all, those countries that are involved in TPP, countries like Japan that are very important markets for us, we will be at a greater and greater disadvantage in those countries as TPP comes into place. So on Japan in particular, U.S. needs to pursue and is pursuing a free trade agreement with Japan. That's a critically important market for us. So I would say we should still be looking at how to expand markets that we already have. Colombia, Panama would be good examples of that. And those are markets where we can grow there, but we do need to look across the Asia-Pacific rim as well for additional opportunities. And again, back to my comment about free trade agreements work. Trade works. We need it. It's important to Iowa agriculture. We've got to play offense. I just think, again, in terms of state trade missions and traveling and sitting across the table from customers, there's just no replacement for showing up. And I think that's an important thing, that even when you've got some uncertainty at that national level with trade negotiations and you know, the trade policy is really set by the administration, there are things that the states can be doing. There are things that our farmers and our commodity organizations and our livestock groups can be doing to improve the situation here in Iowa. And we're going to continue to do our part here in the state.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Secretary Nag.
Great to be with you.
I had the opportunity to sit down with Secretary Nag at the 2019 Agribusiness Showcase and Conference. For more news and information from that event, visit iowaagnet.com. I'm Anna Hostert reporting for Weekend Ag Matters.
Now we move to Dustin Hoffman and his talk with Governor Kim Reynolds at the very noisy Agribusiness Association of Iowa Showcase this week at the State Fairgrounds.
at the 2019 Agribusiness Association of Iowa trade show and conference. I'm with Governor Tim Reynolds right now. Governor, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be here and just a great opportunity to say thank you to all of the members for being such a great partner in helping us drive the economy. We worked together so well on so many issues. It was an opportunity to say thanks for your expertise and for your support with water quality, talking about innovation and technology and taking care of the environment, the impact that they have in rural Iowa, which we're very aligned with. We want to do what we can to empower and grow rural Iowa. Of course, no conversation doesn't happen in front of this group without talking about trade and the impact that, that continues to have on agriculture and our commodities.
You know, you mentioned trade. I know there's a delegation in China right now, hopefully going to get something going on. Any inkling to anything that could be happening, or at least if there'll be an extension on this relief that we got in December?
Well, we're starting to see some things break, and, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, we've said that before, but I think they're communicating, so that's good. That wasn't happening. I think the president just indicated that he was meeting again with Xi, so I invited him maybe to come back to the United States. Ambassador Branstad has been involved in the negotiations that are taking place in China, so they're working diligently every day to, you know, to hold them accountable, but to try to get something done, and we need to have it wrapped up. But in the meantime, we are continuing to look for new opportunities. The lieutenant governor just got back from a trade mission to Colombia and Panama. There's some opportunity there. EU had some good news this week for our soybean farmers, and then, you know, Argentina and Chorus. So there are some positive things out there. I did mention to the group we can use their support. It's important that we get USMCA ratified. That needs to be done as soon as possible. And one of the reasons it needs to be done, it provides predictability to the market, which is good. But also, I think once we get that ratified, then we can start to deal with steel and the impact that that still has on the pork industry down there, because the tariffs are still in place for that in Mexico. So.
And Speaker Pelosi had made the comment a couple days ago that she said there might be a few things they want to see tweaked, but other than that, she thinks it's got enough bipartisan support to get through.
I hope so. I'm going to be out in Washington, D.C., as I indicated, next week. I'll be sitting down with each one of our congressional delegation and just asking them to support, talking about how important it is. I think, you know, we need to lead on this in Iowa. We need to have our entire delegation supporting it. I'm going to possibly even talk about doing a joint letter. So I think we have a real opportunity in Iowa to demonstrate that bipartisanship and lead by example, and so I'm hoping that they'll be willing to do that.
One more thing to wrap up, E15. I know you've been pushing for it. Wheeler was here in August at the state fair, and everything sounded good. Here we are in February. Yes, the government shut down, slowed things down. But I know Senator Grassley this morning said he was hoping that something could be done by February, but of course that's all up in the air, depending on what happens to the government this week.
Yeah, Administrator Wheeler, I've actually talked to him a couple different times. I talked to him during the shutdown just to see where we were at in the rulemaking process, because I knew it was extremely important. We were running out of time. He indicated if they were able to get back open within the next 2 weeks that he thought that it could still make the timeline. It was a priority of his and the administration. We actually did open back up within that two-week time span. I did talk to Senator Grassley. He was meeting with him because he's going to go before confirmation. And so the senator said, can I relay the conversation that you had with him and say that we spoke? And I said, absolutely. I would appreciate you reinforcing it. And I am going to meet with him again next week and just to get in front of him again. I think Governor Ricketts actually is going to join me in that meeting so that we can both just again advocate on the importance of getting this done so that we can launch this in June. It'll make a huge impact to the amount of ethanol that we're able to make and just the amount, the bushels of corn that will go into that. So we have, I think it's 2 billion bushels is the kind of the estimate that they're saying just by doing that. So it's a positive thing for agriculture.
Well, Governor Reynolds, I thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dustin and Anna. Back with an ag journalist who just returned from Brazil in a moment.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
Chris Clayton is an ag policy reporter for DTN and the Progressive Farmer magazine. Chris likes to get his news firsthand, so he spent 2 weeks in the interior of Brazil. He looked at the vast landscape that has been changed from trees to farms over the past 40 years.
They have a new president of Brazil,
and he is called the Trump of the Tropics. Are you picking up anything that is a change, a significant change in their governmental policy that could occur under his administration?
I think you're going to see some loosening of regulations in agriculture, and that was some expectation from some of the farmers in different ways. Just the paperwork that they have to deal with in terms of delivery and transportation issues, things such as that. That was something that they, I got a sense from the people I talked to, not just farmers down there, that there was a lot of optimism. There was so much corruption in the prior governments, so much money that was uncovered that turned hands over at the highest levels, that they felt if Bolsonaro's government can simply operate and avoid the corruption, that would be an improvement. But they did believe that there would be some reduction in regulatory issues. And that turns over to the issue that I thought was kind of fascinating, and I haven't finished a really an article about it at this point. I did write a small mention of it in a column, but the issue of what might happen with reserves in Mato Grosso with either rainforest or their cerrado, their savanna. And some of these farms have huge reserve requirements that they're, talking 65 to 80% of the actual acreage has to be kept in reserve. And at that point, where we're at now, we kind of have this equilibrium with Brazil when it comes to soybean production. We know they have the second crop, obviously, and those advantages. But if Bolsonaro's government changes policy and loosens the rules on those reserve requirements, then suddenly you're opening up potentially, 10, 15, 20% more acreage down there in Brazil for those farmers as well. And that would be... have a tremendous impact, I think, on the markets overall globally for any of those crops being produced down there.
What do the people of Brazil think of Americans now? Did you get any feedback from them, good or bad?
It was a very positive and good experience. I think maybe hotel staff probably finds Americans high maintenance in different ways, whether it's from breakfast to what we expect out of a hotel. But beyond that, most of the people that I dealt with were very friendly and open. And the farmers themselves really view the purpose of U.S. and Brazilian farmers to feed the world. They don't really see it as much of a competition in that we're all in this together. Kind of sense, their pricing is based upon what they see on the CME board, minus the discounts that they face for transportation, which, basically is, our farmers can have some pretty dramatic basis issues themselves. So they kind of see themselves as really, very much along the lines of, American farmers, and you kind of saw that interaction between our farmers and their farmers, and that they even though one is speaking U.S. English, the other is speaking Portuguese, they're still talking the same language when they're talking about cropping challenges, delivery challenges, the problems that they face with prices, exchange rates, all those same kind of issues.
Chris, where can people read your information or get it in any other form?
DTNPF is our free site where people can often see some of our articles in top stories or our blogs.
That's Chris Clayton from DTN. And that's our show. I've arranged for John Philip Sousa to take us out of here. Anna and Dustin are lined up, and we are marching. This show is a podcast if you care to get it delivered to you each week. Weekend Ag Matters on Podbean or iTunes. We also cover serious ag news on our website, iowaagnet.com. Weekend Ag Matters is a production of the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.